would return the favor. Most stayed away, but a few trailed us, begging.
"Anything, anything, a dropper, a vial," said one, gesturing to his eyes.
"Please,"
implored another,
"we haven't had a kick in days."
Their cheeks were pocked and scarred, like they'd been crying tears of acid. I could hardly look at them.
"Whatever you want, we haven't got it," said Emma, shooing them away.
The beggars dropped back and stood in the road, watching us darkly. Another called out in a high, fraying voice,
"You there! Boy!"
"Ignore him," Emma muttered.
I side-eyed him without turning my head. He was squatting against a wall, in rags, pointing at me with a trembling hand.
"You him? Boy! You're him, ain't ya?"
He wore an eye patch over glasses and flipped it up to study me.
"Yeah!"
He whistled low, then flashed a black-gummed smile.
"They been waiting for you."
"Who has?" I couldn't take it any more. I stopped in front of him. Emma sighed impatiently. The beggar's smile grew wider, crazier.
"The dust mothers and knot blowers, the damned librarians and blessed cartographers, anyone who's everyone!"
He raised his arms and bowed in mocking worship, and I got a whiff of ripe funk.
"Waiting a long time!"
"For what?"
"Come on," said Emma. "He's obviously a lunatic."
"The big show! The big show!" said the beggar,
his voice rising and falling like a carnival barker's.
"The biggest and best and most and last! It's almost here!"
A weird chill rattled through me. "I don't know you, and you sure as hell don't know me." I turned and walked away.
"Sure I do,"
I heard him say.
"You're the boy who talks to hollows."
I froze. Emma and Addison turned to gape at me. I ran back, confronting him.
"Who are you?"
I shouted in his face.
"Who told you that?"
But he just laughed and laughed, and I could get nothing more out of him. We slipped away just as a crowd began to gather.
"Don't look back," Addison warned.
"Forget him," said Emma. "He's a madman."
I think we all knew he was more than that, but that's all we knew. We walked fast in paranoid silence, our brains humming with unanswerable questions. No one mentioned the beggar's bizarre pronouncements, for which I was grateful. I had no clue what they meant, and was too exhausted to speculate. And I could tell from their dragging feet that Emma and Addison were flagging too. We didn't talk about that either. Exhaustion was our new enemy, and to name it would only have empowered it more. We strained to see any sign of the White's Bridge as the road ahead sloped downward into an obscuring bowl of fog. It occurred to me that Lorraine might have lied to us. Maybe there was no bridge. Maybe she'd sent us into this pit, hoping its denizens would eat us alive. If only we had brought her with us, then we could have forced her to—
"There it is!"
Addison cried, his body forming an arrow that pointed straight ahead. We struggled to see what he saw. Even with his glasses, Addison's vision was sharper than ours, and after a dozen paces, we could make out, just dimly, how the road narrowed and then arched over some sort of chasm.
"The bridge!"
Emma cried. We broke into a run, exhaustion momentarily forgotten, our feet sending up puffs of black dust. A minute later, when we stopped for breath, the view had cleared. A shroud of greenish mist hung over the chasm. Looming faintly beyond was a long wall of white stone, and beyond that, a high pale tower, the top of which was lost among low clouds. That was it. The White's Fortress. There was an unsettling blankness about it, like a face with its features wiped clean. There was a wrongness about its placement, too, its great white edifice and clean lines contrasting bizarrely with the burned-over waste of Smoking Street, like a suburban shopping center plopped in the midst of the Battle of Agincourt. Just looking at it charged me with dread and purpose, as if I could feel all the disparate strands of my silly and scattered life converging toward a single point, unseen behind those walls. That's where it was, the thing I was supposed to do, or die trying, the debt I had to pay, the thing for which all the joys and terrors of my life thus far had been a prelude. If everything happens for a reason, my reason was on the other side. Beside me, Emma was laughing. I gave her a baffled look, and she composed herself.
"That's where they've been hiding," she said by way of explanation.
"It would seem so," Addison said. "Do you find that humorous?"
"Nearly all my life I've hated and feared the Whites. Across all those years I can't tell you how many times I've imagined the moment we'd finally find their lair, their den. I'd expected at the very least a foreboding castle, walls dripping with blood, a lake of boiling oil. But no."
"So you're disappointed?" I said.
"I am, a bit."
She pointed accusingly at the fortress.
"Is that the best they can do?"
"I'm disappointed, too," said Addison. "I hoped at least we'd have an army alongside us. But from the looks of it, perhaps we won't need one."
"I doubt that," I said. "Anything could be waiting for us on the other side of that wall."
"Then we'll be ready for anything," Emma said. "What could they throw at us that we haven't faced already? We've survived bullets, bombing, hollow attacks. The point is, we're finally here. And after all these years of them ambushing us, we're finally bringing some fight to them."
"I'm sure they're quaking in their boots," I said.
"I'm going to find Cole," Emma went on. "I'm going to find him and make him weep for his mother. I'm going to make him beg for his worthless life, and then I'm going to put both hands around his neck and squeeze until his head melts off."
"Let's not get ahead of ourselves," I said. "I'm sure there's a lot standing between us and him. There'll be Whites everywhere, and armed guards, probably."
"Maybe even Hollows," Addison said.
"Definitely Hollows," said Emma.
She sounded vaguely excited by the idea. "Point being," I said, "I don't think we should storm the gates without knowing more about what's waiting for us on the other side. We may only have one chance at this, and I don't want to throw it away."
"Okay," said Emma. "What do you suggest?"
"That we find a way to sneak Addison inside. He's the least likely to be noticed, small enough to hide almost anywhere, and he's got the best nose. He could do recon, then sneak out again and tell us what he found. That is, if he's up for it.
And if I don't return, said Addison.
Then we'll come after you, I said.
The dog took a moment to consider, but only a moment. I accept, on one condition.
Name it, I said.
In the tales that are told about us after our victory, I should like to be known as Addison the Intrepid.
And so you shall, said Emma.
Make that extremely intrepid, Addison said. And handsome.
Done, I said.
Excellent, said Addison. Time to have at it, then. Nearly every one we care about in the world is on the other side of that bridge. Every minute I spend on this side is a minute wasted.
We would accompany Addison as far as the bridge, then wait nearby for his return. We began to jog downhill, the going easy, the shanty town around us growing denser as we advanced. The gaps between shacks closed until none remained, the whole of it blurring past in an unbroken patchwork of rust-eaten metal. Then, abruptly, the shacks and lean-tos came to an end, and for 100 yards, Smoking Street returned to a wilderness of caved walls and blackened timbers, a buffer zone of sorts, perhaps enforced by the whites. At last we came to the bridge, the mouth of it bearded by a scrum of people, a few dozen in all. While we were still too far away to register the state of their clothes, Addison said,
"Look, an encamped army laying siege to the fortress. I knew we wouldn't be the only ones to take up the fight."
Upon closer inspection, however, these were anything but soldiers. With a disappointed "humph," Addison's bright little hope winked out. "They're not laying siege," I said. "They're just laying." The wretchedest shanty-towners we'd seen yet. They were slumped in the ashes, arranged in postures of such listless torpor that for a moment I mistook even the ones who were sitting upright for dead. Their hair and bodies were blacked with ash and grease, and their faces so afflicted with pits and scars that I wondered if they were lepers. As we picked our way between them, a few looked up weakly, but if they were waiting for something, it wasn't us, and their heads slumped down again. The only one standing was a boy in a flap-eared hunting cap who prowled between the sleepers, rifling their pockets. Those he woke swatted at him, but didn't bother giving chase. They had nothing worth stealing anyway. We were nearly past when one called out,
"You'll die!"
Emma stopped and turned, defiant.
"What was that?"
"You'll die!"
The man who spoke lounged on a sheet of cardboard, his yellow eyes peeping through a burrow of black hair.
"No one crosses their bridge without permission."
"We mean to cross it anyway. So if you know something we should be aware of, speak now."
The lounger stifled a laugh. The rest were silent. Emma looked them over.
"None of you will help us?"
One man started to say,
"Be careful to—"
But as soon as he'd begun, another man hushed him.
"Let them go, and in a few days we'll have their drippings."
A moan of agonized desire went up among the shanty-towners.
"Oh, what I wouldn't give for a vial of that," said a woman by my feet.
"For just a drop, a drop,"
sang a man, bouncing on his haunches.
"A drop of their drippings."
"Stop, it's torture,"
another whimpered.
"Don't even mention it."
"To hell with all of you!"
Emma shouted.
Let's get you across, Addison the Intrepid.
And we turned away in disgust. The bridge was narrow, arched in the middle, and built from marble so clean that even ash from the street seemed wary of trespassing on it. Addison stopped us just shy of the edge.
"Wait, there's something here," he said,
and we stood by nervously while he closed his eyes and sniffed the air like a clairvoyant reading a crystal ball.
"We need to cross now. We're exposed out here,"
Emma muttered, but Addison was elsewhere. Besides, it really didn't seem like we were in much danger. No one was on the bridge, nor was anyone guarding the barred gate on the other side. The top of the long, white wall, where you might expect to see men posted with rifles and binoculars, was similarly empty. Other than its walls, the fortress's sole defense seemed to be the chasm that curved around it like a moat, at the bottom of which churned a boiling river that released the sulfurous green steam which hung all around us. The bridge was the only way across that I could see.
"Still disappointed?" I asked Emma. "Downright insulted," she replied. "It's like they're not even trying to keep us out."
"Yeah, that's what worries me." Addison gasped, and his eyes sprang open. They shone electric.
"What is it?"
Emma said, breathless.
"It's only the faintest of traces, but I'd no Balenciaga Wren's scent anywhere."
"And the others?"
Addison sniffed again.
"There were more of our kind with her. I can't say who, precisely, or how many. The trail goes quite muddy. Many peculiars have come this way recently, and I don't mean them," he said, looking banefully at the squatters behind us. "Their peculiar essence is weak, almost non-existent."
"Then that woman we interrogated was telling the truth," I said. "This is where the whites bring their captives. Our friends were here." Ever since they'd been taken, an awful, suffocating hopelessness had been tightening around my heart, but its grip loosened now, slightly. For the first time in hours, we were running on more than just hope and guesswork. We had tracked our friends across hostile territory all the way to the White's doorstep. That in itself was a small victory, and it made me feel, if only for a moment, like anything was possible.
"Then it's even stranger that no one's guarding this place," Emma said darkly. "I don't like this at all."
"I don't either," I said. "But I don't see any other way across."
"I might as well get it over with," said Addison.
"We'll come with you as far as we can," said Emma.
"I appreciate that," Addison replied,
sounding somewhat less than extremely intrepid. The bridge could be sprinted across in under a minute, I guessed. But why run? Because, I thought, a line from Tolkien materializing in my head, one does not simply walk into Mordor. We started across at a brisk pace, murmurs and muted laughs following us. I glanced back at the squatters. Certain we were about to meet some grisly end, they were shifting around, angling for good views. All they needed was popcorn. I wanted to go back and pitch every last one into the boiling river.
"In a few days we'll have their drippings."
I didn't know what that meant, and hoped I never would. The bridge steepened. An encroaching paranoia was making my heart beat double time. I felt sure something was about to swoop down and we'd have nowhere to run. I felt like a mouse scurrying toward a trap. In whispers, we reviewed our plan. Get Addison through the gate, then fall back to the shanty town and find somewhere unobtrusive to wait. If he hadn't returned within 3 hours, Emma and I would find a way in. We were coming to the crest of the bridge, beyond which I'd be able to see a small section of the downslope that till now had been hidden. And then the lamp posts shouted,
"Stop! Who goes there? None shall pass!"
We stopped and gaped at them, stunned to realize they weren't lampposts at all, but desiccated heads impaled on long pikes. They were horrible, skin drawn and gray, tongues lolling, and yet, despite not being attached to throats, three of the heads had spoken to us. There were eight altogether, mounted in pairs on either side of the bridge. Only Addison seemed unsurprised.
"Don't tell me you've never seen a bridge head," he said.
"Go no further," said the head on our left. "Almost certain death awaits those who cross without permission." "Perhaps you should say certain death," said the head on our right. "Almost sounds wishy-washy."
"We have permission," I said, improvising a lie. "I'm a white, and I'm delivering these two captured peculiars to call."
"No one told us," the head on the left said irritably. "Do they look captured to you, Richard?" said the one on the right. "I couldn't tell you," said the left. "Ravens pecked out my eyes weeks ago."
"Yours too?" said the right.
"Pity." "He don't sound like any white I know," said the left. "What's your name, sirrah?"
"Smith," I said.
"Ah, we don't have a Smith," said the right.
"I just joined up."
"Nice try. No, I don't think we'll let you through."
"And who's going to stop us?" I said.
"Obviously not us," said the left. "We're just here to forebode."
"And to inform," said the right. "Did you know I took a degree in museum studies? I never wanted to be a bridgehead."
"No one wants to be a bridgehead," snapped the left. "No child grows up dreaming of becoming a bloody bridgehead, foreboding at people all day and having your eyes pecked out by ravens. But life doesn't always scatter roses at your feet, does it?"
"Let's go," muttered Emma. "All they can do is natter at us."
We ignored them and continued up the bridge, each head warning us in turn as we passed.
"Step no further,"
shouted the fourth.
"Continue at your peril,"
wailed the fifth.
"I don't think they're listening," said the sixth.
"Oh, well," said the seventh airily. "Don't say we didn't warn you."
The eighth only stuck out his fat green tongue at us. Then we were beyond them and cresting the bridge, and there it came to a sudden end, a yawning 20-foot gap in the place where stone should have been, and I nearly stepped into it. Emma caught me as I reeled backward, arms pinwheeling.
"They didn't finish the damned bridge," I said,
my cheeks flushing with adrenaline and embarrassment. I could hear the heads laughing at me, and behind them, the road squatters. If we'd been going at a run, we wouldn't have stopped in time and would have pitched right over the edge.
"Are you all right?" Emma asked me.
"I'm fine," I said. "But we're not. How are we supposed to get Addison across now?"
"This is vexing," said Addison, pacing along the edge. "I don't suppose we could jump?"
"No chance," I said. "It'd be way too far, even at a full run, even with a pole vault."
"Huh,"
said Emma. She looked behind us. "You just gave me an idea.
I'll be right back.
Addison and I watched as she marched down the bridge. At the first head she came to, she stopped, wrapped her hands around the pike it was impaled on, and pulled. The pike came out with ease. As the head protested loudly, she laid it on the ground, planted her foot on its face, and gave a mighty yank. The pike slid free of the head, which went rolling off down the bridge, howling with rage. Emma returned triumphant, stood the pike at the edge of the gap, and let it fall across with a loud metallic clang. Emma looked at it and frowned.
"Well, it isn't London Bridge."
20 feet long by 1 inch wide and slightly bowed in the middle, it looked like something a circus acrobat might balance on. "Let's get a few more," I suggested. We ran back and forth, prying up pikes and laying them across the gap. The head spat and swore and issued empty threats. When the last of them had been pried off and rolled away, we'd made a small metal bridge, roughly a foot wide, slippery with head goo and rattling in the ashy breeze.
"For England!"
Addison said, and he shimmied haltingly onto the pikes. "For Miss Peregrine," I said, following him.
"For the love of birds, just go," said Emma, and she stepped on behind me.
Addison slowed us down badly. His little legs kept slipping between the pikes, which made the pikes roll like axles and gave me awful stomach flutters. I tried focusing on where to place my feet without seeing past them into the chasm, but it was impossible. The boiling river attracted my eyes like a magnet, and I found myself wondering whether we were high enough for the fall alone to kill me, or whether I'd survive long enough to feel myself cooking to death. Addison, meanwhile, had given up trying to walk altogether, and instead laid down, whereupon he began to push himself along the pikes like a slug. In this way we proceeded, inch by undignified inch, to just beyond the halfway point, and then my flutters sharpened and gave way to something else, a knot in my stomach that I'd come to know all too well. "Hollow." I tried to say it aloud, but my mouth had gone dry. By the time I'd swallowed and got the word out, the feeling had multiplied tenfold.
"What dreadful luck," Addison said. "Is it ahead of us or behind?"
I couldn't tell right away and had to poke around the feeling for a moment before I could pin it down.
"Jacob! Ahead or behind?" Emma shouted in my ear.
"Ahead." My gut compass was certain, but it made no sense. The downward slope of the bridge was now visible all the way to the gate, and the whole length was deserted. There was nothing there.
"I don't know," I said. "Then keep going," Emma replied.
We were closer to the far side of the gap than the near. We'd be off the pikes faster if we continued forward. I shoved down my fear, bent and scooped up Addison, and started to run, slipping and wobbling on the unsteady pikes. The hollow felt close enough to touch, and I could hear it now, grunting toward us from some unseen place ahead. My eyes followed the sound to a spot in front of us, but below our feet, on the cutaway face of the bridge, where several tall, narrow apertures had been carved into the stone.
There.
The bridge was hollow, and a hollow was inside the bridge. Though its body would never fit through the openings in the stone, its tongues easily could. I'd made it across the pikes and onto solid bridge when I heard Emma cry out. I dropped Addison and spun to see her behind me, one of the hollow's tongues wrapped around her waist and whisking her into the air. She screamed my name, and I screamed hers. The tongue flipped her upside down and shook her. She screamed again. There was no worse sound. Another of its tongues slapped the underside of the pikes, and our makeshift bridge went flying, clattering apart, and plunging like matchsticks into the chasm below. Then the second tongue went for Addison, and the third punched me in the chest. I fell to the ground, the wind knocked out of me. While I struggled for a breath, the tongue slithered around my waist and scooped me into the air. The other had Addison by his hind legs. In a moment, all three of us were dangling upside down. Blood rushed to my head, darkening my vision. I could hear Addison barking and nipping at the tongue.
"Don't! It'll drop you!"
I shouted, but he kept on. Emma was helpless, too. If she burned the tongue around her waist, the hollow would drop her.
"Talk to it, Jacob!" she shouted. "Make it stop!"
I twisted to see the narrow openings through which its tongues had squeezed. Its teeth gnawed at the stone slats. Its black eyes bulged hungrily. We hung like fruit on thick black vines, the chasm yawning below. I tried to speak its language.
"Set us down!"
I shouted, but what came out was English.
"Again!"
Addison said. I shut my eyes and imagined the hollow doing as I asked, then tried again.
"Put us down on the bridge!"
More English. This wasn't the hollow I'd come to know, the one I'd communed with for hours while it was frozen in ice. This was a new one, a stranger, and my connection with it was thin and weak. It seemed to sense that I was fumbling for a key to its brain, and it hauled us suddenly upward, as if winding up to fling us into the chasm. I had to connect, somehow, now.
"Stop!"
I screamed, my throat raw, and this time out came the guttural scratch of hollow speak. We jolted to a stop in midair. For a moment we just hung there, swinging like laundry in a breeze. My words had done something, but not enough. I'd merely confused it.
"Can't breathe,"
Emma croaked. The tongue around her was squeezing too hard, and her face was turning purple.
"Put us down on the bridge,"
I said, in hollow again, the words clawing at my throat as they came. Every burst of hollow speak felt like I was coughing up staples. The hollow made an uncertain rattle. For an optimistic moment, I thought it might actually do as I'd asked. Then it snapped me up and down as fast and hard as you'd shake out a towel. Everything blurred and briefly went black. When I came to, my tongue was numb and I tasted blood.
"Tell it to put us down!"
Addison was shouting, but now I could hardly speak at all.
"I'm crying,"
I mumbled. I coughed, spitting out a mouthful of blood.
"Put us down,"
I said, in broken-tongued English.
"Put us..."
I stopped, reoriented my brain, took a deep breath.
"Put us down on the bridge,"
I said, in crisp, hollow speak. I repeated it three more times, hoping it might slip into some furrow of the hollow's reptilian brain.
"Put us down on the bridge! Put us down on the bridge! Put us down on the..."
It gave a sudden, bone-rattling roar of frustration, pulled me to the openings in the bridge where it was imprisoned, and roared again, flecks of black spittle spraying my face. Then it hauled all three of us up and hurled us back the way we'd come. We tumbled through the air for what felt like too long. We were falling now, I was sure of it, arcing downward to our doom. And then my shoulder connected with the hard stone of the bridge, and we slid and skidded all the way down its slope to the bottom. We were, miraculously, alive, banged up but conscious, our limbs still connected to our bodies. We'd tumbled down the smooth marble bridge, scattering the pile of heads at the bottom as we rolled to a stop. They were all around now, taunting us as we collected ourselves.
"Welcome back," said the one nearest me. "We quite enjoyed your screams of terror. What powerful lungs you have!"
"Why didn't you tell us a hollow was hiding in the damned bridge?" I said, rocking myself up to a sitting position.
Pains flared all over my body, from scraped hands, scuffed knees, and a throbbing shoulder that was likely dislocated.
"Where's the fun in that? Surprises are much better."
"Tickles must have taken a fancy to you," said another. "He chewed the legs off his last visitor."
"That's nothing,"
said a head with a shiny hoop earring like a pirate.
"Once I saw him tie a rope around a peculiar, lower him into the river for 5 minutes, then reel him up and eat him."
"Peculiar al dente," the third said, impressed. "Our Tickles is a gourmand."
Not quite ready to stand, I scooted over a few feet to Emma and Addison. While she sat rubbing her head, he tested his weight on an injured paw.
"You okay?" I asked. "I knocked my head pretty good," Emma replied, wincing as I parted her hair to examine a trickle of blood. Addison held up a limp paw.
"I fear it's broken."
"I don't suppose you could have asked the beast to set us down gently."
"Very funny," I said. "Come to think of it, why didn't I just tell it to kill all the whites and rescue our friends, too?"
"Actually, I was wondering the same thing," said Emma.
"I'm joking."
"Well, I'm not," she said.
I dabbed at her wound with my shirt cuff. She drew a sharp breath and pushed my hand away.
"What happened back there?"
I think the hollow understood me, but I couldn't make it obey. I don't have a connection with that hollow like I did with the other one. That beast was dead, crushed under a bridge and probably drowned, and now I was a little sorry about it.
"How did you connect with the first one?" asked Addison.
I quickly recounted how I had found it frozen in ice up to its eyeballs, and after a night spent in strangely intimate hand-atop-head communion, I had, apparently, managed to safe-crack some vital part of its neurology.
"If you had no connection with the bridge hollow," said Addison, "why did it spare our lives?"
"Maybe I confused it?" "You need to get better at this," Emma said bluntly. "We have to get Addison across."
"Better? What am I supposed to do, take lessons?
That thing will kill us the next time we get near it. We'll have to find another way across."
"Jacob, there is no other way."
Emma raked a veil of mussed hair away from her face and held me with her eyes.
"You're the way."
I was launching into a creaky rebuttal when I felt a sharp pain in my backside and leapt, yelping, to my feet. One of the heads had bitten me on the ass.
"Hey!"
I shouted, rubbing the spot.
"Stick us back on our pikes like you found us, vandal,"
it said. I punted it as hard as I could, and it tumbled away into the crowd of squatters. All the heads began to shout and curse us, rolling about grotesquely with the action of their jaws.
I cursed back and kicked ash in their horrible, leathery faces until they were all spitting and choking. And then something small and round came sailing through the air and hit me wetly in the back. A rotten apple. I spun to face the squatters.
Who threw that?
They laughed like stoners, low and snickering.
Go back where you came from,
one of them yelled. I was starting to think that wasn't a bad idea.
How dare they?
Addison snarled. Forget it, I said to him, my anger already fading. Let's just...
How dare you?
Addison shouted, livid, rising up to address them on hind legs.
Are you not peculiar? Have you no shame? We're trying to help you.
Give us a vial or get stuffed,
said a ragged woman. Addison trembled with outrage.
We're trying to help you, he said again. And here you are, while our people are being murdered, our loops torn out root and branch, sleeping before the enemy's gate. You should be flinging yourselves at it.
He pointed his wounded paw at them.
You are all traitors, and I swear one day I shall see you dragged before the Council of Imbrans and punished.
Okay, okay, don't waste all your energy on them, Emma said, wobbling to her feet. Then a rotten head of cabbage bounced off her shoulder and fell splat to the ground. She lost it.
All right, someone's gonna get their face melted, she yelled, waving a flaming hand at the squatters.
During Addison's speech, a group had been muttering in a conspiratorial huddle, and now they came forward holding blunt weapons, a sawed branch, a length of pipe. The scene was turning ugly, fast.
We're tired of you, a bruised man said in a lazy drawl. We're putting you in the river.
I'd like to see that,
Emma said. I wouldn't, I said. I think we should go. There were six of them, three of us, and we were in rough shape. Addison was limping, Emma had blood running down her face, and thanks to my injured shoulder I could hardly lift my right arm. Meanwhile, the men were spreading apart and closing in. They meant to drive us into the chasm. Emma looked back at the bridge and then at me.
Come on. I know you can get us across. One more try.
I can't, Em. I can't. I'm not messing around. And I wasn't. I didn't have it in me to control that hollow, not yet at least, and I knew it.
If the boy says he can't do it, I'm not inclined to disbelieve him, Addison said. We must find another way out of this.
Emma huffed.
Like what?
She looked at Addison.
Can you run?
She looked at me.
Can you fight?
The answer to both was no. I took her point. Our options were winnowing fast.
At times like this, Addison said imperiously, my kind don't fight. We orate.
Facing the men, he called out in a booming voice,
Fellow peculiars, be reasonable. Allow me a few words.
They paid him no attention. As they continued closing off our escape routes, we backed toward the bridge, Emma crafting the largest fireball she could muster, while Addison yammered about how the animals of the forest live in harmony, so why can't we?
Consider the simple hedgehog and his neighbor, the opossum. Do they waste their energy trying to throw one another into chasms when they face a common enemy, the winter?
No!
He's gone completely crackers, Emma said. Shut your gob and bite one of them!
I looked around for something to fight with. The only hard objects within reach were the heads. I picked up one by the last wisps of its hair.
Is there another way across?
I shouted into its face.
Quick, or I'm throwing you into the river!
Go to hell!
It spat, then snapped at me with its teeth. I flung it at the men, awkwardly, with my left arm. It fell short. I rooted around for another head, picked it up, and repeated my question.
Sure there is, the head sneered. In the back of a prizo van. Though if I were you, I'd take my chances with the bridge hollow.
What's a prizo van? Tell me or I'll fling you too!
You're about to get hit by one,
it replied, and then three gunshots rang out in the distance.
Bam! Bam! Bam!
Slow and measured, like a warning. Immediately the men who'd been coming at us stopped, and everyone turned to look down the road. Half drawn through a cloud of swirling ash, something large and boxy was rumbling toward us. Then came the growl of a big engine downshifting, and out of the black appeared a truck. It was a modern machine of military issue, all rivets and reinforcements and tires half a man high. The back was a windowless cube, and two flak-jacketed machine-gun-armed whites stood guard along its running boards. The moment it appeared, the squatters went into a kind of frenzy, laughing and gasping for joy, waving their arms and clasping their hands like marooned shipwreck survivors flagging down a passing plane. And just like that, we were forgotten. A golden opportunity had smacked into us, and we weren't about to waste it. I tossed aside the head, scooped Addison into the crook of my left arm, and scrambled out of the road after Emma. We could have kept going, cut away from Smoking Street, and retreated to some safer quarter of Devil's Acre, but here, finally, was our enemy in the flesh, and whatever was happening or about to happen was clearly of importance. We stopped not far off the roadside, barely hidden behind a knot of charred trees, and watched. The truck slowed, and the crowd swarmed it, groveling and begging, for vials, for Suli and Ambro, and just a taste, just a little, please, sir, disgusting in their worship of these butchers, pawing at the soldiers' clothes and shoes, and getting steel-toed kicks in return. I thought surely the whites would start shooting, or gun the engine and crush those foolish enough to stand between them and the bridge. Instead, the truck stopped, and the whites began to shout instructions.
Form a line right over here! Keep orderly, or you'll get nothing!
The crowd fell into formation like destitutes in a bread line, cowed and fidgeting in anticipation of what they were about to receive. Without warning, Addison began to struggle to be set down. I asked him what was the matter, but he only whimpered and struggled harder, a desperate look on his face like he'd just caught a major scent trail. Emma pinched him, and he snapped out of it long enough to say,
"It's her! It's her! It's Miss Wren!"
And I realized that Prizo Van was short for Prison Van, and that the cargo in the back of the white's enormous vehicle was almost certainly human. Then Addison bit me. I yelped and let him go, and in an instant he was scrambling away. Emma swore, and I said, "Addison, don't!" But it was useless. He was operating on instinct, the irrepressible reflex of a loyal dog trying to protect his master. I dove for him and missed. He was surprisingly speedy for a creature with just three working legs, and then Emma hauled me up, and together we were after him, out of our hiding place and into the road. There was a moment, a fleeting instant, when I thought we could catch him, that the soldiers were too mobbed and the crowd too preoccupied to notice us, and it might have happened but for the shift that came over Emma halfway across the road, when she spied the doors at the back of the truck, doors with locks that could be melted, doors that could be flung open, she must have thought. I could read it in the hope dawning on her face, and she passed Addison without even reaching for him and clambered onto the truck's bumper. Shouts from the guards. I grabbed for Addison, but he slid away under the truck. Emma was starting to melt the handle of one door when the first guard swung his gun like a baseball bat. It hit her in the side and she tumbled to the ground. I ran at the guard, ready to do to him whatever I could with my one good arm, but my legs were kicked out from under me, and I crashed down onto my hurt shoulder, a thunderbolt of pain surging through me. Hearing the guard scream, I looked up, saw him unarmed and waving an injured hand, and then he was tripping away into the mad swim of churning bodies. The squatters swarmed him, not just begging, but demanding, threatening, crazed. And now, somewhere, one of them had his weapon. Looking panicked, he waved to the other white with the two hands over the head, "Get me out of here!" I struggled to my feet and ran for Emma. The other guard dove into the crowd, firing into the air until he could pull out his comrade and get back to the truck. The moment their feet hit the running boards, they slapped the side of the truck, and the engine roared. I reached Emma just as it took off for the bridge, its monster tires spitting gravel and ash. I clasped her arm to reassure myself she was still whole. "You're bleeding," I said. "A lot," which was a clunky statement of fact, but also the best I could articulate how awful it felt to see her hurt, limping, a gash on her scalp leaking blood into her hair. "Where's Addison?" she said. But before "I don't know" had left my lips, she interrupted. "We've got to go after it. This may be our only chance." We looked up as the truck was reaching the bridge and saw the guard gun down two squatters chasing after it. As they fell writhing to the dirt, I knew she was wrong. There was no chasing down the truck, no getting across the bridge. It was hopeless, and now the squatters knew it. As their comrades fell, I could feel their desperation turn to rage, and in what seemed an instant, that rage turned on us. We tried to run, but found ourselves blocked on all sides. The mob was shouting that we'd ruined it, that they'd cut us off now, that we deserved to die. Blows started raining down on us, slaps, punches, hands tearing at our hair and clothes. I tried to protect Emma, but she ended up protecting me, for a few moments at least, swinging her hands around, burning whomever she could. Even her fire wasn't enough to get them away from us, and the hits kept coming until we were on our knees, then balled up on the ground, arms protecting our faces, pain coming from every direction. I was almost sure I was dying, or dreaming, because I heard at that moment, singing, a loud, peppy chorus of, "Hark to the driving of hammers, hark to the driving of nails," but with each line came a smattering of fleshy thuds and corresponding yelps. "What smack to build a gallows, the thwack for all that ails!" After a few lines and a few thwacks, the blows stopped raining down and the mob backed away, wary and grumbling. I saw dimly through a haze of blood and grit, 5 brawny gallows riggers, tool belts hung from their waists and hammers raised in their hands. They'd cut a wedge through the crowd, and now they circled us, looking down doubtfully as if we were some strange species of fish they hadn't been expecting to find in their nets.
"Is this them?"
I heard one of them say.
"They don't look so good, cousin."
"Of course it's them,"
said another, his voice like a foghorn, deep and familiar.
"It's Sharon!"
Emma cried. I could move my hand just enough to wipe one eye clear of blood. There he stood, all 7 black cloaked feet of him. I felt myself laugh, or try to. I'd never been so glad to see someone so ugly. He was digging something out of his pocket, little glass vials, and raised them above his head, shouting,
"I've got what you want right here, you sick monkeys! Go take them and leave these children be!"
He turned and threw the vials down the road. The mob flooded after them, gasping and shouting, ready to tear one another apart to get them. And then it was just the riggers, slightly rumpled from the melee but unscathed, tucking their hammers back into their belts. Sharon, striding toward us with one snow-white hand outstretched, was saying,
"What were you thinking, wandering off like that? I was worried sick."
"It's true," said one of the riggers. "He was beside himself. Had us looking everywhere for you."
I tried sitting up, but couldn't. Sharon was right over top of us, peering down like he was examining roadkill.
"Are you whole? Can you walk? What in the devil's name have these reprobates done to you?"
His tone was somewhere between angry drill sergeant and concerned father.
"Jacob's hurt,"
I heard Emma say, her voice cracking. "So are you," I tried to say, but couldn't get my tongue straight. It seemed she was right. My head felt heavy as stone, and my vision was a failing satellite signal, good one moment, gone the next. I was being lifted, carried in Sharon's arms. He was much stronger than he looked, and I had a sudden flashing thought, which I tried to say aloud. "Where's Addison?" I was all mush-mouthed, but somehow he understood me. And turning my head toward the bridge, he said,
"There."
In the distance, the truck seemed to be floating in midair. Was my concussed brain playing tricks? No. I could see it now. The truck was being lifted across the gap by the hollow's tongues. But where's Addison?
"There," Sharon repeated. "Underneath."
2 hind legs and a small brown body dangled from the truck's underside. Addison had clamped onto some part of its undercarriage with his teeth and caught a ride, the clever devil. And as the tongues deposited the truck on the far side of the bridge, I thought, "Godspeed, intrepid little dog. You may be the best hope we've got." And then I was fading, fading, the world irising toward night. Chapter 4. Turbulent dreams, dreams in strange languages, dreams of home, of death. Odd bits of nonsense that spooled out in flickers of consciousness, swimmy and unreliable, inventions of my concussed brain. A faceless woman blowing dust into my eyes. A sensation of being immersed in warm water. Emma's voice assuring me everything would be okay. They're friends. We're safe.
then deep and dreamless dark for unknown hours. The next time I woke, I wasn't dreaming, and I knew it.